Hello, everybody. James here. Storytime with Dutch Mantel. Why are you laughing at me, Dutch?
Oh, I always laugh at you because, you know, that's when I enjoy people is when you can laugh with them. You ever have a friend and make sure they make you laugh?
Hey, but you're always laughing at me, though.
No, I'm laughing with you. I know I'm never laughing at you, so.
No, well, you know what I said just beforehand. Anyway, right, so hello, everybody. It's episode 58.5, or Ask Dutch Anything 2, as we're more or less calling it now, I think. This episode is all your questions. Questions for Dutch at gmail.com. If you want to send your question in and have your question answered by the Dirty Dutchman himself, the original, if you discount one or two, original Dirty Wrestlers. Is that right?
Well, I'm still pissed off that they named Dominic. They put that dirty with him. But I didn't even ask. No courtesy call. No nothing. I'm sure there's no money associated with it. But, and I've said this on, I may have said on our other podcast, Dirty Dominic. I don't have a ring to it, does it? Dirty Dutch does.
It needs to be like Dirty D or Dirty Duh. If we're doing syllables.
Well, anyway, I wish him a lot of luck, though. So,
well, good for him. He can be the newest addition to the Dirty family. But for now, let's get to your questions. And the first one is the one that I gave the option of, do you want to answer it or not? And you went, yeah, no, it's absolutely fine. Brent has sent this in. Have you seen this? Comments. And he sent a screen grab in as well. And it's apparently a quote that Jake Roberts has recently said when your name was brought up. And he says, I think there's always a little jealousy between Dutch and I on his side. Your side, Dutch. I think Dutch thinks he should have been a lot more than he ever was. I don't know. I might be completely missing the boat. He's just seemed to be unhappy with the positions he was put in most of his career. I've always liked him, but that has nothing to do with it. That's...
Okay, what was he responding to?
I have absolutely no idea. That is just apparently to you.
Okay. Well, my name had to come up for something. The only thing I remember saying was that I think I had his first match, but he didn't answer that. He'd have been the perfect one to answer that. And I did my short clothesline with him. And which he took later and became his signature move. But I used it years before he got to the, I mean, I did a short clothesline that you associate that now with Jake, mm-hmm. But he told me, he said, after the match, he said, I love that short clothesline. He said, I'm taking that. I said, okay, and go ahead. And I guess he was serious because he took it. But I will say that Jake did it beautifully. And it was associated with him because he had a higher platform that he used it on. I used it on regional promotions, and he used it on WWE, so more people saw it. But as for that I was unhappy with the place I was in wrestling, well, I've said this before. I think everybody should be not happy if they're not the main event. Because, I said this on our other podcast, that if you don't think that you're main event material, you don't need to be there. I mean, if you're saying, oh, well, I'm third match, that's fourth match, that's where I'm going to get. If you don't think you're main event material, then you're wasting your time. Get out of the business. Because I don't blame anybody or thinking that their main event, because that's where they want to get, they have to have that mindset. So, but Jake, I like him too. Known him a long time. Entertaining as hell. Great, great performer. He's had several out-of-the-ring situations and occurrences that slowed him down. Almost killed him, I think. But he got by him, and my congratulations on that. Jake, still love you, man. Bastard. No, I love you, Jake.
Well, I mean that sort of actually brings up the important point of, overall, when you look back on your career, I mean, can you be disappointed? I mean, you went to nearly every territory. You've been, well, you've done everything.
Well, not everything, but I did what I wanted to do. And I wanted to go to WWF, WWE now. And it took at least 10 years of calling before I got there. And I called and called and called. Here's a story. I used to call so much that the receptionist who answered the phone knew my voice. Mm-hmm. She said, "Hello, WWE." And I said, "Is Vince there?" "Hi, Dutch. How are you?" She knew my voice. I called that much. She says, "Well, you know the question. You know the answer." "No, he's not here. Will you deliver my message?" "I sure will." "How are you, Dutch?" "Good." And then I'd go a week or two and I'd call back. "Mr. McMahon, please." "He's not." "Oh, Dutch, how are you?" Never met the lady. I can't remember her name either. But I call so much that you recognize my name. But that's what it takes. To succeed in this business, you have to have persistence. And you got to have some sense too, by the way. Or back in those days, you didn't even have to have that. You just had to have a big body, a big muscular body. And I never really had that. So I was fighting from the underside anyway. And when I finally got there, and I'm going to tell you how I called one day. And J.J. Dillon was there. And I says, I asked for him. I said, "Is Vince in?" "He's not in." "Is J.J. there?" "Yes." And he called. And then he got, "Hello, J.J. "Yeah, who's this?" "Dutch." "Hi, Dutch. How you doing?" Blah, blah, blah. And I told him I wanted to come in. He said, "Okay, let me check and I'll call you back." Okay. Hung up. I said, "Well, I won't hear no more from him." He called back about 5 minutes later and says, "Dutch, J.J. And I didn't expect him to call. He says, "When can you start?" I went, "You gotta be shitting me. When can I start?" I said, "Well, yesterday." But, and he gave me a date. And actually, he gave me, he wanted me to manage two guys that I knew well that lived in the same town. We all lived in Nashville. And it was Ron and Don Harris as the Blue Brothers. And he says, "Come in." And I mentioned it to Vince. And Vince says, "Yeah, you make a great fit with the Blue Brothers." It was that easy. I said, "Hell, if I'd have known this, I'd have talked to JJ a long time ago." And then I had a starting date in about 3 weeks. So I was finishing up Puerto Rico and I went back to Puerto Rico and then went to WWE. Crazy.
Next one. Now, and I'm going to have to tee up a video for this. Chris, did you know that Jim Cornette was bestowed a special title on him in WCW by Teddy Long? And now this is a video of Doom, Teddy Long, and Jim Cornette. So have a watch of this.
"Nice looking suit you got on."
"Well, let me tell you something about this suit, Jimmy Cornette. I am wearing this suit in honor of James Brown. You know, he's out of jail now.
Right.
And that took a lot of wheeling and dealing. And he wore this suit every Sunday when he went to Mass. And he donated it to me. And I'm wearing it in honor of James Brown. And I want to say something right now. Any of you lifetimers,
so this is from like 1989.
Or any of you people that are in jail for the electric chair, anything like that, write me. Now, go ahead and write me if you need any help. Now, please write me. But if you've been in jail for forgery, I can't help you. There's nothing I hate worse than somebody writing a bad check.
I like worse
now, it's
as
all
well.
Right to bounce a basketball, but don't bounce a bad check. All right?
Well, Theodore, since you were able to get James Brown out of jail, I have got this membership card. I'm making you an honorary Kentucky colonel."
"You don't mean it."
"Yep, uh-huh."
"Well, Jimmy Cornette, one thing I want to thank the colonel for, they did spell my name right. And since you did this for me, I'm going to get my financial advisors to make you an honorary black Muslim. And I think we'll call you Kareem Muhammad Cornette. How about that?"
"All right, that'll be great. And hey, I know one more thing."
There we go. Did you know that that Jim Cornette was an honorary black Muslim?
I didn't know that.
Courtesy of Teddy Long.
Yeah. Hey, that was a good interview.
They don't do them like that anymore, do they?
No. If you're in prison for the electric chair, I can't do it. I can't help you out. But no, they don't do interviews like that anymore because that wasn't written down. He just went out and he's doing an interview And it was entertaining. And then when I guess Cornette and, you know, had worked it out already what they were going to say, but it wasn't written down by a writer. And Teddy and Jimmy, they got together. And remember on the podcast that came out Friday, I says, when talent gets a match, they put it together, not the agent. So when they got this interview, they put it together, not an agent and not a writer. And that's the difference between wrestling today, wrestling production today, than it was back then. It was just, to me, more enjoyable. And you could tell they put that together and they were laughing and they enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it. I may have seen that before, but it was very good. But I never knew that Jim Cornette was a honorary black Muslim. I didn't know that. I know it now.
Where do you rank Teddy Long's interview skills? Because I don't really think he gets any plaudits at all for actually being really good, a really good talker.
He is good. And he fits the role. And I've known him since he was a referee. Always, even as a referee, and even, you know, when I was wrestling, Teddy was always very nice to me, very cordial, very friendly, helpful, and I think I was the same to him, and I got a lot of respect for him because he hung in there when it didn't look like he would get nothing, but he hung in there, and he got rewarded pretty well. He ended up being like the head guy on Raw, didn't he?
Yeah, general manager of SmackDown or something like that. Yeah.
And he was good. I knew him back, and I think he's from Atlanta. Is he from there?
Ooh, you're gonna test me now? I don't know. You carry on. I'll find out.
Well, I think he was from Atlanta because I worked with him in WCW, and he knew a lot about Atlanta. He was a referee on the old WCW TV shows. So I figured he had to be around close somewhere.
So it says he was born Birmingham, Alabama, billed from Atlanta, Georgia. So I suspect he moved there at some point.
Yeah, he's from there. Yeah. I think he told me one time. But good guy.
Right, let's move on then. And we are not showing a video of this one because I've seen it once. It is so gross. Norman Pereira, Cambridge, Ontario, Canada. Jeez, that was a struggle. My question is in regards to the incident where Invader 3 was coughing up blood after Manny Fernandez came off the top. You know what this is, don't you? Okay, I'll read the rest. Came off the top turnbuckle and landed with his knee on Invader's chest. Some have suggested that this was a work. Was this a revenge shoot for Bruiser Brody? What happened here? Thanks and love you guys. Keep up the good work. So for people who don't know, and I suspect quite a lot of people won't know, what's the setup to this whole thing and what happened in the ring?
Well, I guess it's referring to the Invader and the Bruiser Brody incident. That, what's the guy that come off the top rope? What was his name?
Manny Fernandez.
Manny Fernandez and dropped a knee onto Invader 3's throat, causing him to cough up blood. Some people have suggested it was a work. Really? You think so? Maybe. Yeah, I remember when they did that. You know how they got the blood in his mouth?
Tell me.
Oh, secret. They took a condom and they actually put blood in it and put it back here in his mouth. So when he came off the top rope, he would bite the condom. Then the blood would come out. It looked very realistic. It really did. And they brought the medics out, carted him out of the ring. And I don't know where this angle was going, but they was trying to get Manny Fernandez over. And they did. So
I don't think he coughed up enough blood to even fit in his mouth because he spewed it out. I've heard a theory And I think the guy, whoever invaded number three was, has said, or someone close to him said, that what he did was drank a load of vodka and pig's blood. And that's how he ended up with this sort of like cascading vomit of blood coming out. Does that sound even remotely likely?
Maybe. But how much of that blood could you... So much. It had to happen at the start of the match.
I think we best watch it. Hang on one second. I'll try and find it. Okay, we got it lined up. Here it is. Let me just turn the volume right down. And we're off. I think this is the one. So that's not the one. There we go.
Yeah. Wow.
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, it was effective.
I know, you see the audience jumping up and down in the back there.
See the people standing up?
Mm-hmm.
And Puerto Rico was a place that was Blood City anyway. So if they stood up, they were concerned. Now, I'm looking at that building. That was, I thought it was a house show, but it wasn't. It was a building where they used to do TV that had like three sides to it or something like that. And I remember when that happened. I wasn't there, but I remember when it happened. And I had a story about, they did the TV on a Thursday, and I forgot the story about this is that Fernandez, Manny, apparently went out and he got drunk or something, and he didn't show up the whole weekend. That's what I heard. I said he did some blow, or he did something, and they saw him Monday and they said, "Where were you?" He says, "What? I was there." I don't know. It was one of those deals, but Puerto Rico was the wrong place to go if you had any kind of a problem with illicit or illegal drugs.
or looking at blood as well.
And they had Invader 1, Vader 2, Vader 3. And that was Invader 3. And I remember the guy. And I think, and you said you heard that it was pig's blood.
This is something in the back of my mind from years ago. Vodka and pig's blood, maybe.
What's that do?
Well, makes you puke up blood, apparently, if that was the case. But that was a lot of blood spewed there.
Well, yeah, but it was in a condom, sealed off, and he bit it. And that's why he could do that.
He must have had a three pack of them.
he must have had it fed to him somehow, because the referee got down, I think, after the first one, and may have given it to him, or he may have had it in his mouth. I don't know. But whatever they did, people didn't expect it, so they weren't looking for anything. And you could see the blood going up.
Yeah.
Brother, watching Puerto Rican TV years ago, like I said, was Blood City. If they had any kind of a limitation on blood, it didn't apply there.
We shall move on. Mike Siegler, longtime listener. I'm hooked on listening to the podcast. My question is, what would be the top five territories that made you the most money? This was actually, we already addressed this on the last podcast. And we, sorry, Mike, but we pretty much talked about the top three. We'll move on. Lily in Henderson, Kentucky. Just wondering if you have any good stories about Bill's boy, Jamie. He gets a lot of flack, some deservedly, but as I know him in my personal life, I think he's a damn good guy and one of the biggest characters I've ever known. Thanks, Dutch. Now, we have talked about the story where you caught him driving underage.
Yeah. Well, he told me a story one time. He was in jail. And they all liked him. Jamie is a likable little bastard. You'll like him. And he'll talk to you like he has known you all his life. If you don't even know him, he'll come up and shake your hand, hug you. Hey, man. But he's never met a stranger anyway. So Jamie's done a lot of crazy stuff.
We may have talked about a couple of these. We may have talked about a couple of these on the show before.
Okay, one time he was in jail, and they hired some painters to paint the jail. And Jamie says, "Hey, I can do that." They said, "What, paint?" "Yeah, I can paint." And then for the next week or two, they let Jamie paint the whole jail. And they said, "A beautiful job." And he said, "What else you need to do?" Because he was, I guess he had 6 months to do or some shit he'd done, some crazy stuff. Jamie's too much. Jamie, I brought him to Puerto Rico. Oh, my God. What a mess he was there. Remember I said going to Puerto Rico, if you have any kind of a drug problem, is the wrong thing to do. But he wanted to come. He wanted to come. So he came down there. And I remember one time they did something in the ring, and the people started chasing him. They was in a stadium show. They went down to the ring. Jamie and his partner,
Wolfie,
they started running, and they did. I don't know why they didn't run back to the dugout, but they ran out into outfield and the gate opened up and they ran all the way around and back in and then ran through the front door to coming into the dressing room. And they said, "Damn, it's about ready to catch." He said, "They was about ready to catch us." Jamie's too much. He is too much. I would have to think of some stories, but
I'll tell you the ones that we know. We know the underage driving one where you caught him.
Yes.
We know
yes.
the one why he was paid so little for WrestleMania that year. Do you know what? I've never asked. Just like apart from all the stories and everything like that, how was Jamie as just a pure wrestler? Because I only saw him really, I mean, a tiny bit in the USWA, a tiny bit in the WWF. But man, when he was against the Road Warriors in the WWF, what? He was there to get beaten up. But man, what a personality.
Well, he's the show himself. He's the show. He'd stand up and he'd beat the guy up and he'd do the little strut. No, you want to kill him. Because everybody in the crowd thought they could beat his ass. And the thing is, everybody in the crowd was probably right. But he was in the ring doing something that and pissing them off. Because he'd make you mad. Because, you know, and I want to have him here for our podcast, but you got to run him down. So if we announce him, we may have him or we may not. Because Jamie thinks nothing of, you know, not holding to an obligation. He could tell you, yeah, and he may mean, yeah, I'll show up, or yeah, I'm going to the bar. So, but he's a crazy guy. And I hope he's with us. You know, his mother died and his sister died. And that was Bobby Eaton's wife, the sister, Donna. It was her name. And then his mother died. And I hope Jamie's with us for quite some time, because he isn't actually an undiscovered treasure. He really is. But he's so likable. You can't hate him unless you knew him. And then you'd hate him. You'd probably hate him even more.
Man, my editor would hate that. All the bleeping that would have to happen. But anyway, we'll move on. We've got time for a couple more, I'm sure. Ben, hi, Dutch and James. Does Dutch have any Honky Tonk Man road stories? What was his relationship like with Jerry Lawler? This is Honky Tonk Man's relationship with Jerry Lawler. We, the people, he says.
Well, Honky Tonk Man was Jerry Lawler's, I don't know, first or second cousin. And I don't think they weren't really close, but that's how Wayne Ferris got into the business. And I knew Wayne a long time ago. So when I keep talking about Puerto Rico, I had a partner in Puerto Rico. And when I finished up the first time, I was going to go back, but the partner, he'd already moved on or something. So I was going to they said for me to get another partner. I said, okay. And I first got Dennis Condrey. But then Dennis canceled out on me. But then I ended up with Wayne. So if you see anything down there that says Danny Condrey, that's really Honky Tonk Man as my partner. And he had never been to Puerto Rico before. And, you know, he enjoyed it. He liked it. I'm trying to remember a story about him because I told him how crazy those fans were. And those fans got after us one night, and I'm trying to fight them off. He said, man, I've never seen anything like this. And I'm trying to think of another story. We went somewhere, and they were belting us with crap. I don't know what happened.
Well, let me ask this then. How come Honky Tonk Man and Jerry Lawler just never seem to get on?
Well, I'm saying because I think Jerry was forced to help Wayne by his mother and his aunt. They wanted him to help Wayne too. It was like Jerry was on TV and he was a big star and he was making all this money. So why couldn't they help Wayne do the same thing? Because Wayne had already been working independence around Memphis. And he's got another cousin there too. What was his name? He was the referee. And they all kind of got in the business at the same time, except Wayne probably made more money than all of them, really, when he was the Honky Tonk Man. And when he went to WWF with Jimmy Hart. Funny, it had a hell of a Memphis connection. With the WWF, Jimmy Hart and Lawler and Wayne and all those guys up there. What you find out, Carl Fergie.
God, I don't know where I got that name out of my head, but yeah.
Yeah, that was the other cousin. So, and they didn't get along because of, you know, who knows, professional jealousy. Family jealousy. Who knows why they didn't get on. Mm. But I never knew Wayne to really dislike Lawler. He would talk about him. He'd call him the king. You know how Wayne had that Southern accent. And he would talk about him. And it wasn't in a flattering way, but it wasn't in a mean way either. Mm.
Don Bishop. Hey, guys. Dutch, I'm a big old school fan since the 70s from Tallahassee. Question, was there ever another wrestler you found it difficult to work with because he would crack you up selling the match, reacting to blows in a particularly funny way? Or was there a wrestler in particular you remember cracking up the other wrestlers while working a match? So a wrestler too funny for their own good?
I don't really. They were guys that were funny in the dressing room. But as for the ring... not that much. I don't think. I don't remember one. Unless it was me. But I don't know if I cracked anybody up. I may have hit them, potatoed them in the head with whatever I hit them with. And maybe cracking them up that way. But being funny, nah, I don't remember that.
Okay, I'm sorry, Don. That's a bit of a strikeout of a question. But it was a good question, though. I liked it. Graham.
That was a good question.
Graham Stevens. How did super heavyweight wrestlers do a poo on a plane? Were you ever in the presence of a super heavyweight wrestler while they were struggling to perform simple bodily functions due to their size? I love it. Every single time I mention a poo, your face lights up.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't make it a habit of standing outside the bathroom door when big overweight guys like Yokozuna went in there. And I didn't make it a point to say, I wonder how he's sitting on that little toilet in there. How's he doing? I never made it a habit to really expend a lot of thought on that. But that is a good question. I don't think Yokozuna could have got into a restroom setting on a plane. He couldn't get in, period.
I struggled to get in then.
He couldn't even sit down. And I don't know how he would do the rest of it. I don't know how he would do the secondary stuff. I have no idea. I did remember they set up, I think we were on the way to Europe. And when I was with WWF, and they kind of we were on a, I think, a commercial flight, and they set up like a couple of wrestlers on either side to keep the other passengers out while Yokozuna was back in there. And I just saw it. I didn't go in there and participate because I didn't even know what they were doing. But he finally came out, and I don't know why he came in the back anyway, because he was in first. He'd have to be in first class. He would take, well, he couldn't even take a first class seat because they have that big thing right in the middle that doesn't move. So, but he was up in first class in the biggest seat they could put him in. I guess he probably had to prepare for it before he made that flight, but it's hard to prepare for a bathroom visit on a flight that's like 7 hours long. I don't know how he did it.
I can't remember if I've asked you this before or not, but did you ever work with or see the Maguire twins?
I'm trying to remember.
You know the ones I mean, though, don't you?
Oh yeah, I know who they are. I don't think I ever met them. But I remember Haystacks. I remember him. He made a trip with me one day. My car looked at me like, you got to be shitting me. And he got in and the car went, ooh. Oh, my God. But I remember Haystacks. And, of course, Yokozuna.
Plowboy.
And they had, and Plowboy, I was getting ready to bring him up. But he wasn't near as big as those other guys. He was tall, and actually he would be the most athletic looking one of them all, was Plowboy. And Plowboy was, he was, I don't know what his IQ was, but it couldn't have been much over 70, because he had that look in his eyes, and he really spoke. He was from Mississippi, so you can imagine Mississippi English trying to interpret what he was saying. Everybody was neighbor. Hey, your neighbor. Oh, he was too much.
I've heard with Plowboy that he was a locker room purveyor of maybe some of the less fine knockoff jewelry and other stuff that you might
want to buy. Oh, yeah. Always selling something. Always. And he brought some, he'd lay it out and here, and he'd have it in front of him. He'd sit back and he'd put his hands up like this. And yeah, it was a Rolex. It was a this, it was a that. It was like a $29 watch with a Rolex, you know, title on it. That's what it was. And he's selling them only for $100. So.
Was he an attraction, like he'd come in for a week or two, or was he like a mainstay of the territory, whatever territory he would be in?
Oh, he'd come to Memphis, he'd stay there. Hmm. And I don't know if he was he wasn't the most smartest guy in the world, so he may not have known his own worth. If Peter maybe had somebody to handle him and treat him like that, he could have made it for a short while, but not much. He was, I think he's passed on now, I think.
Yeah, he has. One more, and then we will shut down this podcast. And the last question goes to Alberto Marino. Hello, Mr. Dutch. About a year or so before he passed away, I spotted Hercules Hernandez with his family at Disneyland, California. My buddy said I should introduce myself and perhaps ask for a picture with him. He was still in phenomenal shape and legit looked like he could snap me like a twig. I thought twice, then decided to leave him alone. That being said, how did you handle people who asked for pictures and autographs back in the day versus today? Also, can you tell me if I chose wisely with not bothering Hercules? Thank you.
How'd I deal with it?
Yep.
Well, the first time somebody asked me, I just slapped the shit out of them. Just get the hell out of here. No. Yeah, you did choose wisely, because he takes his family with him. So give him his space. Give him his time with his family. Or put yourself in his position. How would you like to be interrupted when you're out with your family, your kids? You're taking away something from that experience. And if you catch him and alone, you might ask him real quick, and he'll either say yes or no. And if he says no, then get away from him. But let him enjoy his time. Now, there was a little bit of a flip-flop, I guess, or about WWE. When the planes land, they go to baggage claim.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Puerto Rico, I keep bringing Puerto Rico up, you don't have this problem because nobody is allowed in Puerto Rico except the people picking up their luggage. I don't think that's the way in the U.S. In the U.S. airports. I think anybody can go in there and meet anybody. But if you see them come in and you run up to them, well, this is what they're thinking. They're thinking you're getting an autograph to sell. And that's what it is. And a lot of guys don't have time because when you get charged with, say, 25, 30 people, and you're in a hurry and you need to get somewhere, you know, and they're tired too, you know, you may get some responses you may not appreciate because they probably don't appreciate getting asked for all those autographs. Now, I know it's a part of the job. It is that. And they understand that too. But sometimes they may have come off a 6-hour flight and they are. And sometimes when these guys don't eat, that blood sugar drops, they're really, really irritable. So get away from them. But I've seen some of the females. They're just as bad. Like, get away from me. So give them their space and go on. Because some of them really, I've ran into the same problem. Some of them are persistent and then act like assholes when you don't sign it. Then they want to be a smart ass and, oh, you're this and you're that and you know. And some of the guys don't want to put up with that. I don't think they've had any kind of physical altercations, but they've been a few bad words said back and forth. So, hey, leave these guys alone. And if they show any signs of being tired or irritability, go the other way.
I think our time is up. Like, this is a psychotherapy.
I haven't knocked anybody yet.
Do you want me to give you a name to knock or?
Just give me a name.
Man, there must be a million names and I can't think of a single one. Dominic Mysterio, you can knock him again for stealing dirty.
That bastard. Well, he didn't do it. He didn't do it. It was that Vince. And that Paul Triple H and Endeavor, they had to be a part of this too to get the name. So, well, like I said,
Endeavor's got deep pockets for a lawsuit, let me tell you.
But it's got to be patented and copyrighted. I never actually went that far.
Well, hang on, you've got a day ahead of him now. Well, right. By the time this comes out on Tuesday, you've got several days now, so you can just go and patent it, trademark it.
Yeah.
Then they won't get the idea by the time that this comes out on Tuesday.
Yeah, but when they have an idea like this, they are way ahead of everybody else.
Mm.
It's already been patented and copyrighted like a month ago.
Mm.
Because they don't do anything unless they make plans for it. Because if something comes out like this, if I had it copyrighted and patented, you know, and then I show it, then they either got to drop it or pay for it. Yeah. So anyway, good. I hope he does well. I hope he does.
And beforehand, you mentioned blood sugar levels dropping because they haven't eaten. Same
with
me.
That's you.
I'm starving,
that's
hungry now. It's 6 o'clock. I am desperate for some food. So that being said, thank you very much for watching. We'll catch you on Friday at... Jesus. Right, okay. There's every Friday, 8 a.m. Eastern, every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Eastern, 2 shows a week, Storytime with Dutch, and I'll do the close out now. So thank you very much for watching. Catch you next time, and Dutch, we the people.
We the people.